Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So neighbors, in doing a show about the Flying Saucer Investigators, a new book by our guest Charles Lear and our guest co-host is Kurt Collins. In doing this book, I was thinking of people I knew over the years, and I'm thinking of the time that I met Charles Berlitz. Now, that's kind of after the book that Charles did, Charles Lear rather than Charles Berlitz, who's no longer with us. And I was thinking here of a time I did a TV show with him. And he was looking for the annotated edition of the case for the UFO, which I happen to have, and I loaned it to him. And he decided to ask me about material he wanted for his book, The Philadelphia Experiment. So we had many, many lunches, which he paid for, because he could. No money, just lunches. And a few times I visited him at his home in Glen Cove, New York, and his office was a converted ship's cabin. Fascinating.
Very cool. That sounds amazing.
He was definitely a character. And I guess partly the blame for the Roswell legend, because he co-wrote the book with William Moore on that. But that would be a topic for our premium show after the PowerCast, because Kurt has a really fascinating piece on his Blue Blurry Line site about it. Instead, the Flying Saucer Investigators focuses on the people of the early days. Charles, first, you're not related to the other Lears, are you?
No. Well, actually, I've heard distantly, but not closely enough to have benefited financially.
Well, you have my sympathies.
Thank you.
I'm not related to any rich people named Steinberg, although my late brother Wally came close, but he died too soon. Anyway, you start by the very beginning, the late 40s, talking about the origins of the modern UFO field. How did you get involved in this?
Well, I've been writing a weekly blog for Martin Willis over at Podcast UFO for going on 4 years now. He said, Charles, you've got an awful lot of material. Why don't you put it together in a book? I thought that'd be a good idea. And he said, I'll contact Philip Mantle. I said, oh, that sounds good. Okay. I got the idea to write a book about the Flying Saucer Investigators. And I pitched the idea to Philip and signed a contract. Off we went. Actually, I think I was already writing the book before I even contacted Philip. But yeah, so that's the genesis of it.
I think you did a great job on things, and while this is not strictly a UFO history, anyone who's read a UFO history book will really benefit from this, because it brings the people, the investigators, to life, and you kind of see the cases through their eyes. So I thought it was a really good way to put some faces to the stories.
Well, thank you so much. Praise from Caesar. Researching, they really came alive for me. And I have got quite an affection for all of them. The relationship between Ray Palmer and Richard Shaver was really just heartwarming. The rivalries and back and forth between Coral Lorenzen and Jim Moseley, and the fake feuds with Gray Barker and Jim Moseley. I mean, all that stuff was really fun. And then along the way, you got flying saucers. What's better than that?
Well, you know, Coral Lorenzen of Afro hated me.
Oh, I'm sure she had it in for a number of people.
Well, it's one story I've told, and I'll just be brief about it, because this is about your book, not about me, where I had a small magazine, UFO Reporter, in the mid-60s, and I ran a summary of an article she wrote for Fate magazine on the case involving the Sicar, New Mexico, sightings with a photograph of the witness. And I ran a summary of that, and she got ticked off and said I should give her $100 for permission to write the summary. And I kind of reminded her as a teenager, hey, it's fair use. And so I didn't hear from her. 10 years later, 1975, Fort Smith, Arkansas, they had a UFO convention where everybody and anybody was there. Keel was there. Lorenz was there. Richard Hall was there. I don't know if John Keel was or not. I don't recall. In any case, I was there with Kurt Southerly, a person who had written for my early magazine, Cappy at MTOR. And we ran across Carl Lorenzen and Jim Lorenzen. Now, Jim was very gracious, said hello. Carl Lorenzen looked at me when I tried to shake her hand and said, oh, you're the guy who 10 years ago, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's holding a grudge.
Didn't understand it, but even worse, it kind of takes away from her reputation as being one of the really, really thorough UFO investigators of the early years, that she held this out. Now, I understand with Jim Moseley, because Jim Moseley invited that kind of response by nature of what he did.
So I want to, before we get too much into those personalities, these were both some people who came in just a little later than the late 40s and the advent of the flying saucer clubs. So Charles, tell us about kind of what led to the development of these clubs and then these contentious personalities that championed some of them.
The first actual paid flying saucer investigator was Kenneth Arnold himself, who I hope I don't have to repeat who he is to your listeners. But after he had his June 24th, 1947 sighting over Mount Rainier of 9 unidentified flying objects, he was contacted by Ray Palmer, who wanted him to look into the Maury Island incident. So he stepped in it big time with that and got in over his head, and that's a mess all in itself. But along the way, a bunch of flying saucer clubs had, you know, developed. There were more clubs than serious investigators. But the first person to put together an investigation group was Carl Lorenzen put together APRA a little before. I'm about to mention Abercay Bender and the International Flying Saucer Bureau. So they both put theirs together, their investigation groups, very close together, I think within a few months. I think it was 1954, if I'm correct. And Albert K. Bender's group was the first to go international. So he... he had people in Australia, New Zealand, of course, Canada and Europe. So that was an international bureau. But I think it was a little overwhelming for Bender and, him telling a story of being visited by three men in black who told him to, be quiet about, flying saucers, recommending him deciding to shut down the International Flying Saucer Bureau because of that, led to the closing of the International Flying Saucer Bureau. But APRO very shortly became international as well and developed a huge network. They lasted until 1988. Then 1956, I believe, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena formed.
Townsend Brown, yes.
Yeah, thank you. T. Thompson Brown. He was the head for a short period of time. He was ousted. Rumors are that he was one of the rumors is that he was siphoning money off for his anti-gravity experiments.
Charles Lear, writing a book about flying saucer investigators with Gene and Kircher in
The Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Here's a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they'd be? Answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who have prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with empty store shelves. Is yours? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for each member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order will ship fast and arrive discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now, before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The early days of the UFO field, talking about the creation of NICAP. And Townsend Brown was ousted, apparently, as you say, Charles Lear, because of allegedly siphoning money from the coffers. Now, Keel ran into problems managing the money at NICAP years later, but maybe we can get to that. But how was the transition here? Townsend Brown was ousted, then Keel took over. What was the process?
Yeah. I think it was voted in by the board. He actually had a profile already. He wrote the first flying saucer, the first article on flying saucers and the first full book on flying saucers. Flying Saucers Are Real. I think that was published, I think it's as early as 1952.
I wanted to ask you about that, but before we go any further with Donald Kehoe. So another book written the same year was Frank Scully's Behind the Flying Saucers.
Yes.
So those were both bestsellers. So I've got a couple questions for you about that. Did these men get rich and famous, and how did that establish the ideas about UFOs to the public?
I don't know about super rich and super famous. It made him some money, and Scully did quite well. I think both those books were bestsellers, so that I'm sure they did well. But I'm sorry. What was the other part of the question?
I wanted you to say a little bit about their influence. So now Donald Kehoe had a
right.
And he thought there was a military cover-up, and so did Scully, but his was a little deeper and stranger.
Yeah, I think Scully lost a lot of credibility when J.P. Kahn, investigative reporter, wrote an article on the whole. Basically, Scully's book covered an alleged flying saucer crash at Aztec, New Mexico. And J.P. Kahn's article pretty much exposed that as a hoax by two con men who were basically bringing prospectors out to oil fields with what is called a doodle bug, which is they claimed could find oil. And they would get people to invest in oil leases. And they claimed that their doodle bug was built using technology from a crashed flying saucer. So J.P. Kahn pretty well exposed this, and it also led to people – he sought people to come out and prosecute it's Silas Newton and Leo Gebauer were the two con men involved. He encouraged people to come out and prosecute before the statute of limitations ran out, and someone did come forward. I think they took him to the tune of $300,000 in 1950s money. They were prosecuted, and they were found guilty. So I think that pretty much Scully definitely took a beating on that one. Meanwhile, Kehoe. That gave him a good reputation in the public as far as his views on flying saucers go. And when he got his position in NICAP, he was very high profile. So, you know, Scully faded into obscurity and Kehoe went high profile.
You know, it's interesting here about Frank Scully in the early days of Jim Moseley's Saucer News.
Mm-hmm.
Scully wrote an article trying to refute Kahn's article. Don't know if it did it that well, but I do recall the article being rather short. Later on, other researchers tried to resurrect Aztec, like Scott Ramsey, for example. Scott Ramsey wrote a book on the subject, appeared on the PowerCast a number of times. I think the evidence was threadbare. I can go into other reasons why it was so threadbare, but
yeah, hangs his argument on the credibility of Silas Newton. So, you know, that's pretty rough.
Understood. And this is the problem there with Aztec. It became the kind of case like Dracula. You drive a stake through its heart and it comes back.
Yeah, that's ufology.
But let's go on with Kehoe and NICAP.
Okay. Well, Kehoe, from the get-go, had been accusing the government, the Air Force in particular, of hiding flying saucer secrets, not telling the public everything they knew. And he got right to work trying to pry it loose. And, you know, Mosley accused a lot of people, but Mosley in particular accused them of being more lobbyists than investigators. So, you know, they really worked Congress trying to get, the Air Force, you know, get in there, testify, and come clean about what they knew. So that was a lot of their effort. But they also did some amazing investigations. I got a chance to visit David Marler and go through his archives. And, you know, you can also find those archives online. They're still at NICAP.org. I think Fran Ridge is maintaining that. And you can find these files, and they're wonderful. They've got, you know, original newspaper clippings from the time. They've got witness testimony, corroborating evidence, documents. I mean, they're amazing. So they did do that, and they also did have a network of subcommittees who were able to, you know, these people in different states and different areas of the world could get right on site and interview these witnesses. So the group did a good job of investigation and left us amazing records. But Kehoe, in terms of scientific investigation, you could say that Kehoe definitely had confirmation bias. He believed they were from outer space and piloted by aliens. But, you know, his secretary, Richard Hall, was a pretty amazing guy, working behind the scenes. And, he was quite rigorous. He actually, wrote UFO evidence, a book. I think it's around 400 pages long. They went through, I think, 3,000 cases. I think 3,000 cases and picked, you know, maybe 10% of the best ones, and got a copy of the book into the hands of every member of Congress. So the group did amazing work. Unfortunately, Kehoe was apparently pretty inept with finances, so they were constantly in financial trouble. At one point in the book, I mentioned he writes a letter in the UFO Investigator, their publication, thanking a member for giving them 2,500 envelopes, which he says marked a sizable cut in our expenses this month.
So, oh boy, we can get more into Major Kehoe and what happened to him as head of NICAP with Charles Lear. We're looking at the flying saucer investigators. These are the early people who got involved in looking into the field. I'm Gene Steinberg. He's Kurt Collins. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Ukrainian and British officials are warning that Russian forces are relying on weapons able to cause mass casualties. Justin Crump, a British military expert and veteran British Army tank commander, telling Sky News that Russia is using whatever they could get their hands on.
I guess Russia is figuring there aren't that many enemy ships to deal with, so they are using these missiles in their secondary role of land attack, but they're not brilliant at that. And it's a further indication of how Russia is having to use everything at its disposal to keep achieving its ends.
The UK's defense ministry says Russian bombers are likely launching heavy missiles in Ukraine that were primarily designed to destroy aircraft carriers using a nuclear warhead. Inflation got worse, not better last month, hitting a high not seen since 1981. That caused Wall Street to close down at the end of the week, marking another losing week. This is USA Radio News. The nationwide average for a gallon of regular gas topped $5 overnight Saturday, according to AAA. That's 19 cents higher than last week and $1.93 higher from this time a year ago. Some places are paying well above $5 a gallon. The highest average for a gallon of gas is in California at $6.43 a gallon. In Mississippi, they have the lowest at $4.52 a gallon. After that, inflation hitting its highest levels in four decades, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says consumer prices have surged 8.6% last month. The cost of groceries up nearly 12%, rent also up by 5.5%. President Biden blaming Russia and its war against Ukraine.
Well, we've never seen anything like Putin's tax on both food and gas.
Economic experts also pointing to money from COVID stimuluses, as well as the Fed for not acting sooner to control inflation. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
The early days of the UFO field, Charles Lear is with us, talking about Major Kehoe, who was not such a great financial manager. I heard that around his sofa they would find old envelopes with checks in it.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I never heard that.
But eventually NICAP dismissed him around the time that the Condon report came out.
Yes.
Tell us about the difference in perspective between these groups. Because I know, for example, Kehoe was pretty much a nuts and bolts guy, and he didn't want to hear anything about contact stories. So what were the other groups like?
Well, not only did he not want to hear contact stories, he didn't even want to hear about humanoids. He thought that anything other than the craft hurt the credibility of the report, so he didn't want to hear any of that. Whereas APRO, they were all about humanoids. They loved their humanoid stories. So that's a huge difference between the two groups. And Kehoe caught a lot of flack from his membership for ignoring significant cases. A great example. Well, the funniest example was what he got into with the Joe Simonton case. That's a case from Eagle River, Wisconsin, 1961. This plumber, part-time chicken farmer, Joe Simonton, reported a flying saucer landing in his driveway, a door opening up, him seeing three humanoids, as she described as swarthy, like Italians. The first one he saw, basically used sign language and gave him a container and asked him for water. So he went and got him water. And then as he's looking in, he sees the other two humanoids and sees one on a griddle, what looked like a griddle, making what looked like pancakes. The first creature sees this, hands him the four pancakes. So Simonton went to the local flying saucer expert Judge Franklin Carter. And because he had attended just one lecture of Carter's, Carter had a UFO club and was a member of NICAP. So he went to Franklin Carter and told him his story, and Carter asked for a pancake for analysis, and Symington gave him one. Carter sent it off to NICAP with a letter explaining the case, and then immediately turned around and told the press that NICAP was analyzing this pancake from outer space. Well, Kehoe just flat out denied they were going to have anything to do with this. They were also in the process of getting the UFO evidence, the book I mentioned, finished and into the hands of Congress. So they didn't want to deal with this at all. And the membership started coming at Kehoe, saying, you know, how could you ignore this case? And, you know, they really hammered him. At the same time, Colonel Robert Friend, a former Tuskegee Airman, was head of Project Blue Book at the time, and he saw this story in the paper. He heard about this story, I think, from a local people at a local air base in Wisconsin, and he called J. Allen Hynek and said, you know, I think you should get out to Eagle River, Wisconsin, because this could turn into a nuisance case. I think NICAP is looking into this, and they'll accuse us of ignoring it. So Hynek goes out there and does an investigation, gets a pancake, and gets it to the Food and Drug Administration for analysis on our tax dollars. And also another independent, I think people from the local airbase got another out to another lab. So you had our government doing two analyses of these pancakes. They turned out to be like buckwheat, typical pancake stuff, you know, flour, Crisco, hydrogenated oil, as they put it, salt, etc. So Kehoe was under pressure, and they sent one out for analysis. The scientist died. They sent it back to Lex Mebane. He got a who was a former Civilian Saucer Investigators member. That actually, that was a very important group early on too, along with Flying Saucer International Flying Saucer Bureau and APRA. But anyway,
by the way, that was the original CSI of New York.
Yes,
it wasn't the lousy TV show. With Harry Sinise, who's a good actor. He was back in the 50s and early 60s. And I read some of their newsletters, which I once had, except for somebody who threw away the file cabinet that I stored this stuff in. And they were just brilliantly researched and written.
Yeah. So in any case, Mebane wanted to do another analysis to the tune of, I think, $180, and another one for, you know, like another hundred something, yeah, I think about $100. And so Richard Hall, you know, I think Kehoe, whoever wrote it, the article for the UFO Investigator, basically said they couldn't see spending $300 on pancake analysis when they had more important things to do. But they were still hammered by their membership for the way they handled this case. So the Air Force actually came off looking really good, and NICAP came off looking really bad. So that's like one example where them ignoring humanoid cases really hurt them.
Well, the Hills, of course, it was took a while for them to recognize the Hills.
Yes, 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 it did. Yeah, he actually has a little, they have a little in like the back of the UFO Investigator, just a little thing saying, you know, we're looking into this. We're withholding judgment, and you know, you can just really feel the sense of the reluctance when you read the article.
There was an article in Saucer News back in those days by a guy named Michael G. Mann, who was a researcher from Brooklyn, New York, and he was also engaged in some of the hoaxing that Jim Ousley did with Gray Barker. But in this particular case, he had written something about how close will Major Kehoe let a UFO get.
I read that, yes.
With the emphasis on cases like Symington, but also the Hills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that also affected them with the Father Gill case. where Father Gill was an Anglican priest in Boinai, Papua New Guinea, 1959. And he and a bunch of students and a bunch of teachers saw not only a craft, but men on top of the craft, four of them who waved at them, and they waved back. He reported this. It went all over the world. Everybody was super impressed by the case. And again, Kehoe was and NICAP were reluctant to even deal with it. And they got angry letters saying, you know, you're going to doubt the veracity of a man of God? You know, how dare you? What's wrong with you? So.
Yeah, so his policy was such a hard line that, you know, he obviously was rejecting even credible witnesses in that case. And so I wanted to ask you, though, while all this was going on, the Air Force saw that these clubs forming and these people writing books, how did they respond to having civilian UFO researchers?
They were part of their PR problem. They didn't come at them directly. They didn't make statements, you know, to the press belittling them, at all, as far as I can see. If you know any better, please let me know. But, they knew they were out there and, you know, they put up, press releases debunking major cases they were working on. The 1957 waves, great example. There were all the automobile outages in the midst of seeing a huge craft around Loveland, Texas. All these cars just stopped working. That's one of the earliest recorded examples of this.
We've got to break with Charles, Gene, and Kurt. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Now, I recall you can amplify on this, Charles, where Kehoe was really taking off on the way the Air Force handled Level in Texas.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Kehoe's man in the field was a guy named James Lee. And James Lee had spent a lifetime of reading esoteric books and had beliefs like that tornadoes were caused by the leftover energy of God creating the Earth. And he also drove around George Van Tassel's flying saucer convention in his, what he called his space mobile, which I think was a big old Cadillac with an infrared detector to make sure that no aliens were listening in on the convention. So James Lee was NICAP's man on the scene at that point.
Boy, so the Air Force, though, you talked about their reaction. There's one thing I know, in the files of Blue Book, there's a newspaper picture, it's a clipping, and someone drew a Hitler mustache on Kehoe, so I don't think they liked him very much.
Yeah. His staff, though, was very endearing. I've talked to I was Barry Greenwood, and they, you know, everybody called him the major. I've heard good things said about him. I think he had an incredible memory, and you know, so there were people for him and against him, I'm sure, but you know, people, as we all know, in this field, people can get ugly and really turn on somebody they don't agree with.
Well, you mentioned the occupants, and in the Kenneth Arnold sighting, some of those early ones, all they saw were saucers. Now, when did the story of humanoids and encounters start coming in?
Well, I would say the Flatwoods Monster case is probably your first one. That's 1952, as far as I can tell. You know, then the Kelly Hopkinsville incident in 1955, where you had these goblin-like creatures that harassed this poor family for an entire night, reportedly. The things really took off in the 19 1957, was it 57 French Wave? I think it, there was a, or 54. I think it was the 1954 French Wave. There was a wave of humanoid sightings in France. Report after report after report. Hairy dwarves, men in what they called little men in diving suits. So there was report after report of humanoids. And that's Kehoe was coming up. Valet was coming up during that time. M.A. Michelle had just written a book, so he was that country's flying saucer expert at the time. Valet wrote him a letter and basically praising him, and Valet jumped into investigation with both feet. But that would really mark the beginning of the major beginning of humanoid reports. And then after that was the Kelly Hopkinsville incident here in the United States, down in Kentucky. And so things took off from there.
So these clubs, they were publishing newsletters and magazines about this, and obviously NICAP was more conservative. What were some of the best and worst of these magazines, and who was behind them?
I think they've all got their value one way or another, either amusing or serious. You had the Gray Barker doing the Saucerian, I think whimsical is the best word for that, along with some, genuine reporting. The APRO Bulletin, they had some very good reports. I my personal favorite is the APRO Bulletin in terms of a serious investigation. There was Gribble. He was a young kid, and he started the very first, I forget his first name, I think it's John Gribble. He started a magazine.
Robert Gribble,
yes, thank you. He started a magazine, and Orfeo Angelucci was one of his contributors. Orfeo Angelucci was a contactee who told amazing stories of being given this elixir by these, beautiful space maidens and just seeing all kinds of stuff. He was a contributor, so that, you take that in terms of credibility for what it is. In terms of credibility, I would say probably the best at the time was the UFO Investigator and the APRO Bulletin. Throughout the 50s and early 60s, and, throughout the 50s and 60s. In terms of the worst, I probably haven't read them, so I have something to look forward to.
Where would you put Saucer News, all this? It wasn't quite as extreme as the Saucerian, and except for the fake feuds, it was very serious.
Yeah, and Jim Moseley is a special case. He called himself a flying saucer skeptic, or skeptical ufologist, I believe, in later days.
Well, he also called himself the court jester.
Yes, that too, exactly. So, he had a lot of fun with it, and, his publication was a mixture of gossip and messing around, perpetrating hoaxes and serious investigation. He was actually, I think, the first guy to really come out and debunk George Adamski.
Right.
That's a really fun magazine to read, especially in the later days. He's definitely the court jester.
Well, of course, some of our listeners know, for about 2 years, I was his managing editor at Saucer News. And it was a paid position. I'd go to school during the day, then shoot on over to 303 Fifth Avenue, where Jim had his headquarters. And some of the things that Jim wrote, I wrote. Because one of the crazy things I could do in those early days, I haven't done it since, was emulate the writing style of different people like Moseley and Barker and Jack Robinson, people like that. So you may not know this, that some of the pieces credited to Jim and Gray and Jack in Saucer News around 1965 or 66, I wrote them. But it doesn't make a difference. It's just one of them things.
Well, I'm torn between being disillusioned and fascinated.
That's about it. I think we could both agree on that. I would say also that I received $5 an hour from Jim. It doesn't sound like a lot of money. But this was at a time when the minimum wage was a dollar and a quarter. So it was like me getting $40, $50 an hour.
That's great.
Yeah, and just think, I'm living at home with my parents, I'm making this money, I'm traveling. I think my smartest move, or stupidest, depending on your point of view, was to leave New York and get into broadcast radio, where I had to take a salary cut. But Jim, as you say, he pulled a lot of stunts, but in 1957, he ran the Adamski expose issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he talked to people around Adamski and got some dirt, as to nobody really saying they saw Orthon, the Venusian he claimed to have met, who subsequently took him aboard his scout ships. He got information that Adamski had definitely hoaxed certain pictures. He wrote that all up.
Now, in terms of the hoaxing of the pictures, there was a magazine from New England called Yankee Magazine. Kurt will remember this. And they duplicated Adamski's photos using light bulbs and, a hubcap or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think Moseley references that, doesn't he, in the 57 article?
Yes, he has a picture in the magazine showing you how close it was to what Adamski did. So, and you also look at the fact that I don't think any other UFO photo looked quite like that one. Charles Jean and Kurt Jurian.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.